The Sundown Motel sits like a forgotten relic on the outskirts of Fell, New York, a place where time stands still and ghosts refuse to rest. Simone St. James's haunting thriller has captivated readers since its 2020 release, becoming a New York Times bestseller and a favorite among murderinos and true crime enthusiasts. The novel's brilliant dual timeline structure has earned it a devoted following, with celebrities like Emma Roberts and Reese Witherspoon praising its atmospheric tension and feminist undertones. What makes this ghost story particularly compelling is how it weaves supernatural elements with a very human mystery, creating a narrative that's both chilling and emotionally resonant. As one Goodreads reviewer put it, it's not just about the ghosts that haunt the motel, it's about the ghosts that haunt us all. In November 1982, 20-year-old Vivian Delaney takes a night clerk position at the Sundown Motel in Fell, New York. She's a runaway from small-town Illinois with dreams of becoming an actress in New York City. But fate has other plans. Working the graveyard shift at a decrepit motel wasn't part of her vision, but it pays the bills while she figures out her next move. The Sundown, with its flickering neon sign and peeling wallpaper, sits isolated on Route 7, drawing mostly truckers and the occasional desperate traveler. What Viv doesn't realize is that the Sundown harbors dark secrets. Doors that open by themselves, lights that flicker without explanation, and the lingering scent of cigarette smoke when no one is smoking. The sound of high heels clicking down empty hallways becomes a nightly occurrence, and room 213 emanates an inexplicable cold that no maintenance check can resolve. 35 years later, Carly Kirk, Viv's 20-year-old niece, arrives in Fell with a mission. Following her mother's death from cancer, Carly discovers a hidden box in her mother's closet containing newspaper clippings about her sister Vivian's disappearance, a family mystery that was never discussed at holiday dinners or family gatherings. The articles paint a grim picture, a young woman vanishing without a trace, leaving behind only her car in the motel parking lot and her purse at the front desk. Driven by grief and a need for closure, Carly drops out of college and travels to Fell, determined to discover what happened to the aunt she never knew, but whose disappearance shaped her family's entire history. The narrative alternates between these two young women, separated by decades but connected by blood and circumstance. Both are at crossroads in their lives. Both find themselves drawn to the Sundown Motel, and both begin to unravel the same web of murders and mysteries that plague the small town of Fell. When Carly takes the exact same night clerk position that Viv once held, wearing the same blue vest and sitting at the same desk, the past and present begin to merge in unsettling ways. She discovers Viv's old notebook hidden behind the desk, filled with detailed notes about local missing women and possible connections that the police never investigated. What makes these parallel journeys so compelling is how they reflect each other while maintaining distinct voices. Viv is angry, determined, and increasingly obsessed with solving a string of local murders that she believes are connected. Young women who disappeared without trace, their cases quickly forgotten by local law enforcement. Carly is grief-stricken, searching for purpose, and gradually pulled into the same investigation that consumed her aunt. Through their intertwined stories, we witness how trauma echoes through generations and how the need for truth can become a dangerous obsession. The Sundown Motel serves as both backdrop and catalyst, its haunted corridors holding secrets that span decades and connect these two women in ways neither could have anticipated. Both Viv and Carly discover that in Fell, the past isn't just prologue, it's a living, breathing entity that demands resolution. The Sundown Motel isn't just a setting, it's practically a character in its own right, breathing with malevolent energy and trapped souls. Built in the early 1970s, when Fell expected to become a tourist destination, the motel quickly became a relic when those plans fell through. By 1982, it's already showing signs of decay, peeling paint, flickering neon, and an abandoned pool filled with leaves and debris. What makes the motel truly terrifying is its ghosts. Betty Graham, murdered in 1978 and dumped at what would become the motel's construction site, appears in a purple floral dress, her face and body bearing the brutal marks of her death. A young boy who drowned in the pool wanders the property, plaintively saying, "I don't feel good." A man who died of a heart attack in the front office chair occasionally appears, muttering, "Goddamn bitch," to female clerks. These aren't peaceful spirits. They're angry, confused, and desperate to communicate. The motel's physical isolation amplifies its menace. Surrounded by darkness with only a distant gas station for company, the Sundown sits on the edge of town like a trap for the unwary. Its layout, two floors of rooms arranged in an L shape around a central courtyard and empty pool, creates a fishbowl effect. Anyone watching from the darkness can see everything happening inside the lighted rooms, while those inside can see very little beyond their immediate surroundings. Most disturbing is how little the motel changes over 35 years. When Carly arrives in 2017, she finds the same furniture, the same handwritten guest book, even the same rotary phone. This preservation creates an uncanny time capsule where past and present blur. As Carly notes while comparing old photographs to the current building, it was like magic, but not the good kind. The Sundown represents all the places women are told to avoid: isolated, poorly lit, populated by strangers with unknown intentions. It embodies the everyday dangers women face and the warnings they receive. Don't work nights. Don't be alone. Don't trust strangers. Yet both Viv and Carly find themselves drawn to this dangerous place, determined to confront what lurks in the shadows rather than hide from it. Fell, New York harbors a terrible secret, a pattern of murdered young women whose cases remain unsolved or questionably closed. Betty Graham, a 24-year-old schoolteacher killed in 1978, was found at the construction site of what would become the Sundown Motel. Kathy Caldwell, a young mother, was stabbed to death in 1980 and left under an overpass. Victoria Lee was strangled on a jogging path in 1981, with her boyfriend initially convicted but later released when evidence didn't match. Tracy Waters, an 18-year-old high school senior, disappeared while bicycling home in November 1982, her body found in a ditch 2 days later. These women, referred to as the Dead Girls of Fell, haunt the town's collective consciousness. They become cautionary tales passed from mothers to daughters. Don't take up jogging or you'll end up like that girl. Their deaths create an atmosphere of fear that shapes how women move through the world. Jenny, Viv's roommate, explains how she and Viv discussed the dangers of being young women working nights. They knew the risks they were taking simply by existing in public spaces after dark. What connects these seemingly separate murders is a pattern only Viv begins to recognize, a traveling salesman who appears in each victim's life shortly before their death. Simon Hess, selling door locks for Westlake Lock Systems, uses his legitimate business as cover to scout for victims. The cruel irony isn't lost on Viv. He sells security devices to women he plans to murder. The dead girls aren't just statistics or plot devices. St. James gives them humanity and dignity. Through Viv's investigation, we learn about their lives, their habits, their relationships. Betty fought fiercely against her attacker. Kathy was a devoted mother. Victoria was just a girl trying to stay slim, who went running while angry after an argument. Tracy was shy and sang in the choir. These details transform them from faceless victims into real women whose lives were violently cut short. The novel explores how female murder victims are treated by media, police, and society. Initial interest fades quickly, investigations grow cold, and the women become footnotes in town history, except to those who refuse to forget them. Viv and later Carly become their advocates, determined to bring justice even when official channels have moved on. What transforms Viv from a directionless runaway into a determined investigator is her haunting encounter with Betty Graham's ghost. When Betty appears in her flowered dress, the same one she wore the night of her death, bearing the terrible wounds of her murder and asking repeatedly, "How did this happen?" Viv can no longer look away. The visceral nature of these supernatural encounters, combined with Betty's desperate pleas for justice, ignites something fierce in Viv. She becomes obsessed with connecting the dots between the murdered women of Fell, meticulously documenting her findings in a weathered notebook she keeps with her at all times, even sleeping with it under her pillow. Viv's investigation is all the more remarkable for its pre-internet analog methodology. She visits crime scenes at different times of day to understand their geography and visibility, noting how streetlights cast shadows and where a killer might hide undetected. She makes dozens of phone calls posing as different people, a journalism student, a concerned relative, a census worker, to extract information from reluctant sources. She follows Simon Hess's silver Buick through the winding streets of Fell, mapping his routine and identifying potential hunting grounds. Her detective work extends to countless hours in the library, studying yearbooks and microfiche newspapers, piecing together a pattern of disappearances that stretches back nearly a decade. The most chilling moment comes when Viv watches Simon Hess spot a teenage girl on a bicycle outside Thompson's drugstore. The girl, Tracy Waters, is wearing a red windbreaker and has her honey blonde hair in a ponytail, matching the profile of his previous victims. Viv recognizes immediately what she's witnessing. He's hunting. The predatory tilt of his head, the way his hands tighten on the steering wheel, the calculated casualness of his surveillance all confirm her worst fears. In that moment, Viv transitions from investigator to protector, desperately trying to warn Tracy Waters and her family about the danger. She leaves anonymous notes in their mailbox, makes late-night phone calls, and even attempts to speak directly to Tracy after school. Despite these frantic efforts, her warnings go unheeded, dismissed as pranks or paranoia, and Tracy becomes Simon's next victim. What makes Viv's investigation particularly poignant is her crushing isolation. When she presents her evidence to Officer Alma Trent, newspaper clippings, witness statements, timeline correlations, she's met with professional skepticism and personal caution. Alma explains she needs concrete evidence, eyewitnesses or confessions, to risk her hard-won career by pursuing the case. As the department's only female officer who fought for years to reach her position, she can't jeopardize everything on circumstantial evidence, no matter how compelling. Even Marnie Clark, a local photographer who briefly assists Viv by sharing crime scene photos and witness accounts, eventually withdraws from the investigation, explaining, "I have more to lose than you do." Her words highlight Viv's unique position as someone with nothing left to lose. This profound isolation forces Viv to make a fateful decision when Simon Hess checks into the Sundown Motel on the stormy night of November 29, 1982. With no institutional support and haunted by her failure to save Tracy Waters, Viv decides to confront the killer herself. Armed only with a hunting knife stolen from a local hardware store and her desperate determination to end his killing spree, she prepares to face evil incarnate in room 213. The ghosts that haunt the Sundown Motel serve as more than mere spectral attractions. They're silent witnesses to the town's most heinous crimes and darkest secrets. Betty Graham emerges as the most prominent spirit, her presence manifesting through a series of distinct supernatural markers, doors that swing open without human touch, lights that flicker in specific patterns, and the persistent scent of Virginia Slim cigarettes that seems to follow her ghostly form. Her attempts to communicate grow increasingly desperate throughout the narrative, first silently mouthing "run" to Viv during their initial encounter, then appearing with progressively more visible injuries, bruises darkening her neck, blood staining her uniform, her face contorted in eternal anguish as she repeatedly asks, "How did this happen?" The motel harbors other lost souls, each trapped in their own tragic loop. The young boy who drowned in the pool appears regularly, his small form dripping phantom water across the concrete, eternally dressed in faded blue swimming trunks. His plaintive, "I don't feel good," echoes through the property, particularly on humid summer nights. The middle-aged man who suffered a fatal heart attack while checking in manifests in the office chair, his presence announced by a sudden drop in temperature and the bitter mutter of, "God damn bitch," before he dissolves into the air. Each spirit seems bound to the specific circumstances of their death, replaying their final moments like a broken record. The novel's treatment of these supernatural elements stands out for its pragmatic approach. The ghosts are presented as simply another aspect of the motel's deteriorating landscape, as real and mundane as the crackling ice machine or the perpetually buzzing fluorescent lights. Viv's adaptation to their presence is particularly noteworthy. She moves from initial terror to almost casual interaction, addressing them directly and with surprising compassion. "I'm sorry," she tells the ghost boy during their third encounter, her voice gentle. "I can't help you." When Betty appears, displaying the full horror of her murder, Viv's response is raw and emotional. "Tell me who killed you so I can fix it. Please, I need to know." The ability to perceive the ghosts creates a distinct division among the characters. Those who can see them, Viv, Carly, and Nick, share a common thread of personal trauma. Viv lost her mother under mysterious circumstances, Carly grew up without knowing her aunt, and Nick carries the weight of his sister's disappearance. This shared experience of loss seems to act as a supernatural antenna, allowing them to perceive what others cannot. The connection between grief and ghostly sensitivity adds another layer to the narrative, suggesting that personal pain might open channels to understanding deeper truths. The ghosts evolve from mere supernatural elements into active participants in the story's unfolding mystery. Betty's appearances intensify dramatically when Simon Hess returns to the motel, lights exploding, doors slamming with increasing violence, and her form materializing more frequently and with greater clarity. During the climactic confrontation with Hess, the supernatural presence reaches a fever pitch. The click of phantom heels echoes through empty corridors, the temperature plummets to freezing, and an otherworldly moan reverberates through the building. While the ghosts never directly intervene in physical events, their growing agitation creates an atmosphere of mounting dread that propels the living characters toward their final confrontation with evil. At its core, The Sundown Motel is about female rage. Justified, righteous anger at a world that treats women as disposable. This rage manifests differently across characters, but stems from the same source, the recognition that the systems designed to protect women often fail them completely. Viv's rage builds slowly as she connects the murders of Betty, Kathy, Victoria, and Tracy. When Simon Hess admits to killing them because "no one ever stopped me," her fury becomes action. The difficulty she experiences stabbing him, "it was harder than I thought it would be to pierce his chest," underscores both the physical and psychological barriers women must overcome to fight back against male violence. Carly's rage is more subtle but equally powerful. It's directed not just at whoever harmed her aunt, but at the family silence that erased Viv from their history. Her mother's refusal to discuss her sister while alive left Carly with a legacy of unanswered questions and unacknowledged grief. Her determination to uncover the truth is a form of rebellion against this enforced forgetting. Even peripheral female characters carry this theme. Jenny, Viv's roommate, expresses anger at how quickly Viv's disappearance was dismissed. Alma Trent's carefully controlled demeanor masks frustration at the limitations placed on her as a female officer. Marnie Clark's initial reluctance to help Carly stems from years of being ignored when she tried to raise concerns about Simon Hess. What's remarkable is how the novel validates this female rage rather than pathologizing it. When Viv confronts and kills Simon Hess, it's presented as justice rather than vengeance. When Alma and Marnie help cover up the killing, it's portrayed as a necessary correction to a system that would have allowed Hess to continue murdering women. Even 35 years later, when Viv turns herself in, there's a sense that her actions, while illegal, were morally justified. The novel asks uncomfortable questions about justice. What happens when the systems designed to protect us fail? Is taking justice into one's own hands ever justified? The answers aren't simple, but the narrative suggests that women's rage in the face of systemic failure isn't just understandable, it's inevitable. Both Viv and Carly pay heavy prices for their pursuit of truth. Viv must sacrifice her entire identity, disappearing from her life and family to escape prosecution for killing Simon Hess. She creates a new persona as Christine Fawcett, complete with false identification documents, and lives in hiding for 35 years. Though she briefly mentions marrying once after her lover Jamie, the relationship only lasted 11 months because she couldn't let anyone in. Her life becomes defined by secrecy and isolation. Carly's pursuit costs her the conventional path she was following. She drops out of college, moves to a strange town, and eventually decides to make Fell her permanent home despite her family's confusion. She trades a predictable future for an uncertain one, driven by her need to understand what happened to Viv and, by extension, to understand herself. Other characters make similar sacrifices. Alma Trent risks her career and freedom by helping cover up Hess's murder. Marnie Clark lives with the knowledge of her complicity for decades. Nick Harkness returns to the town where his family tragedy occurred, facing painful memories to confront his past. What's striking is how these sacrifices are presented not as defeats, but as necessary costs for survival and integrity. Viv doesn't regret killing Simon Hess. She regrets not stopping him sooner. When she finally turns herself in 35 years later, saying, "My name is Vivian Delaney and I disappeared 35 years ago, I'd like to make a confession," there's a sense of relief rather than remorse. Similarly, Carly's decision to stay in Fell and study criminology represents not a derailment of her life, but a discovery of her true purpose. Her relationship with Nick offers the possibility of connection without requiring her to abandon her newfound path. As she watches snow fall after their ninth date, there's a sense of peace that was absent at the beginning of her journey. The novel suggests that truth, however painful, offers a kind of freedom. Viv's confession, Carly's investigation, and even the ghost's persistent manifestations all represent attempts to bring hidden things to light. The final demolition of the Sundown Motel symbolizes this theme. The physical structure that housed so many secrets is finally laid bare, allowing both the living and the dead to move toward resolution. The novel concludes not with perfect justice or complete resolution, but with cycles being broken and new beginnings emerging from tragedy. Viv's cancer has returned, and she awaits trial for Simon Hess's murder, but she's finally free from decades of hiding. Her confession brings closure not just to her own story, but potentially to the families of Betty, Kathy, Victoria, and Tracy, whose murders can now be definitively linked to Hess through DNA evidence. Carly has found purpose in studying criminology and researching at the library. Her relationship with Nick offers healing for both of them, two people shaped by family tragedies, finding connection in their shared understanding of grief and loss. The demolition of the Sundown Motel suggests the town might finally be ready to address its dark history rather than continuing to ignore it. Even the ghost seemed to find some measure of peace. After Hess's body is discovered and Viv confesses, there's no mention of further supernatural manifestations. While the novel doesn't explicitly state that the ghosts have moved on, their absence from the final chapters suggests their purpose-bearing witness to injustice has been fulfilled. The novel's ending acknowledges that healing is neither quick nor complete. Victoria's case is being reinvestigated, suggesting there are still unanswered questions about Hess's crimes. Alma maintains her secretive demeanor about her connections to the case, hinting at more secrets yet to be revealed. Viv faces legal consequences for her actions, despite their moral justification. Yet there's hope in these imperfect resolutions. Carly watches Snowfall after being intimate with Nick, finding beauty and peace in the present moment despite the complicated past that brought them together. Viv, despite facing trial, has reclaimed her true identity after decades of living as someone else. The truth, however painful, has finally emerged from the shadows. The Sundown Motel ultimately suggests that confronting our ghosts, both literal and metaphorical, is necessary for moving forward. Only by acknowledging the past, however dark, can we hope to create a different future. As the novel's dedication states, this story belongs to the odd girls, the nerdy girls, and the murderinos, those who refuse to look away from darkness and instead shine a light directly into it, demanding truth no matter the cost.